Capital Investment Committee will come to order. Representative Hausman, welcome. The bills that we're going to hear today are going to be here, held over for future consideration, and you're here to provide information to us so that we'll make the right picks. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill. This is the Homes for All agenda. This coalition is an amazing group. Whether I go to the NAACP or to the faith group Isaiah, I see that they have a message: we support the Homes for All agenda. It's a very strong coalition. I'm honored to carry the Homes for All agenda. There are a number of co-authors on this committee for this bill. It's a coalition of over 250 organizations around the state. I'll give you the one paragraph Ms. Dyson description of the bill. This bill expands the allowable uses of housing infrastructure bond proceeds. It authorizes $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds with a set aside to finance emergency shelters, and also appropriates $100 million in state GO bond proceeds for public housing rehab. A few years ago, Governor Dayton saw this emerging crisis and formed a task force. We spent, I think, well over a year gathering information and setting some goals. And so that it wouldn't be a study that just goes up on a shelf, Prosperity's Front Door was formed. This was the organization that was supposed to continue to work on the goals. They recently had a press conference where they gave us a scorecard. There's some good news and bad news. Goal one, commit to homes as a priority. They said we've made a strong start. Goal two, preserve the homes we have. They said we're losing ground. Goal three, build more homes. They said we're making slow progress. Goal four, increase home stability. Again, a strong start. Goal five, link homes and services. Slow progress. And finally, goal six, support and strengthen home ownership. That's where people can build wealth. And that is a place that we're losing ground. So clearly that's the challenge and why we're bringing the bill. So to the bill. Your support for House File 3326 would put $500 million in bonds toward the development and preservation of affordable housing around the state. This request truly impacts the entire state. Many communities are struggling with housing needs. Last week, you probably received at your office legislative district housing profiles. They were dropped off by a Homes for All partner, MHP. What they show is that while the needs vary from community to community, one thing is clear: we do not have enough housing, especially for our state's lowest earners. Think of the person serving our children's lunches at school, checking us out at the grocery store, taking care of our loved ones as home health aides. One of the most stark statistics we have from the most recent Wilder Foundation homeless study is that 56% of individuals entered homelessness because they could not afford their housing. This is likely a conservative estimate as well, because it doesn't count households that are doubled up, maybe families sharing an apartment, or sleeping in vehicles, among other situations. So the bill requests $100 million to support preservation and safety upgrades to publicly owned housing. Repairs to these properties are absolutely crucial because in many smaller communities, publicly owned housing is the only affordable housing. If we lose it, we lose it permanently, along with federal rental assistance. To make that real, I'm going to use some statistics that NARO gave, and that is, of that $100 million, what are the needs? From 2012 to 2019, a seven-year period, we had a total, the state, of $35 million. That comes to $5 million a year. $5 million a year for the whole state for public housing. That's why every year we have fallen further behind. And now they tell me that the immediate need for public housing in this state is $355 million. So we'd have to do that $100 million for 4 years in a row if we wanted to just meet the immediate needs. And so we've seen some of the impacts of that when the Drake Hotel burns, or when the sprinklers, when there's a high rise in Minneapolis without sprinklers. You'll be hearing more about that. The $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds support deeply affordable housing with the prioritization of 30% AMI, both some with supportive services around them and some without. There's in your packet a key facts handout. It looks like this. And you will see two charts, the severe mismatch and the households below 30% median. That's a typo, median income. You will see two charts that outline why the need is so great for deeper affordable units. There's a 65,000 unit supply gap to serve households at or below 30% AMI. Deeper affordability does mean deeper subsidy, and the best financing tool to help us get there is housing infrastructure bonds. Through this financing, the state partners with nonprofits and other affordable housing developers, and they're able to leverage private financing. For every $1 in state funding, it leverages $4 in private financing or preserves $4 in federal subsidy. If we lose that federal subsidy, we don't get it back. To give you an example of those nonprofits that you might be familiar with, Lutheran Social Service, Catholic Charities, Common Bond, Beacon, Aon. Beacon is a faith-based group that organizes 100 faith communities. Aon has become specialized in identifying where naturally occurring affordable housing is and being very good at trying to save it. This bill also supports a one-time new use for shelter capital needs around the state because Minnesota needs more emergency shelters. Homelessness has grown 10% statewide, 9% in the metro, 13% statewide, and the unsheltered homeless rate is up 62% in the past 3 years. 80 of our 87 counties do not have enough shelter beds, and 63 counties do not have a fixed site. This is one time. Why is it one time? Because we'd like to think we won't be sheltering homeless people forever, that eventually we will get to a point in this state where they do have permanent housing. Madam Chair, I do have one testifier.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Representative Hausman. Mr. Daring.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm here today. And also, I'd like to say good morning to you too, Vice Chair Lee, Ranking Member Ardell, and the committee members. I'm here on behalf of Homes for All, so that the people of the streets could be heard. Homes for All is a coalition that has representation in every county in the state of Minnesota. The coalition continues to grow because the affordable housing crisis is being felt statewide. Across the continuum, which is why we advocate for $500 million, I myself personally think we should go for $1 billion, but in bonding. You might be less familiar with the groups that I'm a part of. I'm a member of MICA. I'm a member of Freedom from the Streets, Street Forces of Change, and the Envision Community in Minneapolis. Being a part of MICA, I was introduced to a Homes for All coalition. Through Homes for All, I've learned and I met different people and also met more people than I would like to meet that's living on the street because of my work doing advocacy. By being a member of Freedom from the Streets and Street Voices of Change, I meet a lot of people every day who's currently experiencing homelessness. They come out, they try to get resources, so that's why they come to Freedom from the Streets and Street Voices of Change, because we try to help each other better our lives. Okay, now, Freedom from the Street is an advocacy group who only members are people who are currently homeless, formerly homeless, and people who are on the verge of being homeless. People always forget those who's at home struggling very hard. Maybe the next check, before the next check, they might be back on the street. We never know.
So we're going to have to stick with the script because we don't have very much time. She wants us to finish.
With that, I would like to just say the $500 million in bonding housing. And
this is the page I think that they would find helpful.
I would just would like for you guys to support, to give support for the House File 3326 so that we may better the lives of people out here on the streets and that the people who's on their way to the street, please. Thank you and have a nice day.
So, Madam Chair, he's doing this for the first time, so he missed a couple of points that I'm going to underscore because of the power of his work. Because of his personal experience, he knows about the importance of things like getting funding for lockers so people can store their personal belongings while they're looking for work, while they're going to work, or while they're reestablishing relationships with family. And as he came to Minnesota, he was quickly connected with those services so that he was able to get a temp job within 2 days of being here. He discovered shelters that were well-funded, and they were run in a way that helped get resources to him. And within a month, he was able to work enough overtime to save enough to move out of the shelter into his own place. So that's his personal experience. And now he spends a lot of time as a community advocate trying to help others. And so the power of his presence today, I think, is important to us.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Darien. Would you introduce yourself to us by name?
Rome Darien.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hausman, thank you for bringing this bill forward. You've been a real champion for housing for many years, and it's a very important role that you play. As has been asserted here, affordable housing and, might I add, workforce housing are very important issues to address in this, for the state of Minnesota. And there are a multitude of bills on this topic this session. And you have one, I think, that's an important bill, but it remains to be seen which ones we're able to do and how much we're able to do. But I'm just urging that we do something to address this issue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
House File 3358, Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair.
Representative Considine.
Thank you. While they're making their way down, could I move the minutes?
You may.
Thank you.
Please do that.
Okay. So moved.
Representative Considine, minutes of the 37th meeting, 91st session, February 27, 2020.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Considine moves adoption as printed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Representative Considine, minutes for February 25th, 2020.
So move, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Considine moves minutes as printed. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Representative Hassan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, good morning. Thank you for taking up House File 3358. The shelter housing funding proposal. I would like to thank my colleagues on this committee for joining me on this bill as co-authors, including Representative Erdahl, who just walked out of the room, Nornas, Lehman, Jurgens, Lee, and Lilly. The purpose of this legislation is to address a large gap around the state in emergency housing for those who are homeless. As you may recall from the past couple years, the urgency in need for homeless shelters has hit high record. In 2018, more than 200 people created a tent city in Minneapolis and called it the Wall of Forgotten Natives, and that was in my district. And their purpose was to draw attention to this need. Last November, a public housing apartment fire in Minneapolis Cedar Riverside neighborhood killed 5 people and left many families homeless and in need of shelter. Last but not least, the Drake Hotel. This temporary shelter was seriously damaged by fire in the early morning of this past Christmas, putting 250 people and their families out in the cold. And sadly, Madam Chair, this is the tip of the iceberg. The need is urgent, and the need is in communities big and small all across the state of Minnesota. This is why I present to you today with House File 3358. This proposal creates $50 million competitive pool of funding. Half or $25 million of it is in housing infrastructure bonds, and the other half or $25 million is one-time funding would be granted out to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agents. All of these funds would be dedicated for the construction, acquisition, and rehabilitation of short-term housing for those who are homeless. To give you a little bit more detail on the bill, Madam Chair, I have Jordan May from the Red Lake Nation to testify here with me.
Welcome, Mr. May.
Bonjour, and thank you, Rep. Hussein, for authoring this bill and for Madam Chair Murphy for hearing it. My name is Jordan May, Executive Director of the Red Lake Homeless Shelter located on the Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians Reservation. I have been the Executive Director and a founding member of the Red Lake Tribal Collaborative to Prevent and End Homelessness since 2014. I know homelessness firsthand and from a professional viewpoint. I am here to speak in support of HF 3358 on behalf of the 100-plus Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless Members, a group of mayors from Duluth, Rochester, St. Paul, and Minneapolis, and shelter programs from Simpson Housing in Minneapolis to Oasis in Little Falls and beyond. The Red Lake Homeless Shelter houses between 250 and 300 families and single adults annually. We are beyond capacity and have plans to expand our emergency shelter services, but lack the funding to do so. In 2018, Red Lake participated in the Wilder Research Homeless Surveys and counted over 700 people experiencing homelessness, which more than tripled the count completed in 2015. We saw the greatest increase in unsheltered families and single women. We are hoping to renovate an existing community center into a 24/7 year-round emergency shelter dedicated to families and single women. We also intend to transition the existing shelter into a low barrier single men shelter and increase our beds from 18 to 54. This is what we need to do at the bare minimum. If the $50 million requested in HF 3358 were to be awarded, Red Lake would move forward with building a more comprehensive emergency shelter for families and single women, encouraging family reunification, sobriety, and other wraparound services. The funding would also help us to include permanent housing for single vulnerable adults, a needed next step in the housing continuum. We have money in place to cover the operating cost to ensure it will be self-sustaining, but we need the one-time funding to build the shelter. Homelessness is a statewide issue. 80 counties lack enough shelter beds for individuals, and 73 counties lack enough shelter beds for families, leaving many unsheltered throughout the year. Of the 10,233 people experiencing homelessness across the state, two-thirds of them are entering homelessness for the first time. We have a mismatch between the housing need and the housing available. Minnesotans waiting for affordable housing have to wait an average of 12 months, and the shelters fill the gap until housing is available. Sadly, homelessness disproportionately impacts people of color and indigenous populations. We are 10 times more likely to experience homelessness than white Minnesotans. Unsheltered homelessness across the state has increased by 62% between 2015 and 2018, with a 36% increase in greater Minnesota and a 92% increase in the Twin Cities. This means that one in four people experiencing homelessness are sleeping in cars, under bridges, on the light rail, in fish houses, or some other spaces not suitable for sleeping. And many people who are homeless actually have jobs. One out of three people experiencing homelessness have a place of employment. The homeless encampment on Franklin and Hiawatha Avenue last year showed firsthand the need to create new emergency shelter beds because there are so many unsheltered homeless. Red Lake is one of the many communities that could help their most vulnerable residents by increasing the number of shelter beds. I have a handout here. If you look at the handout titled Minnesota Homeless, you will see that there are plans for creating over 1,300 new emergency shelter beds throughout the state. This is a conservative number due to Minnesota neglecting to adequately fund our emergency shelter system for too long. We know investments into housing will end homelessness. We also know families need a safe place to stay while moving from homelessness into their future homes. However, Minnesota does not have a mechanism to fund capital requests for emergency shelter. Shelter providers have had to fundraise to fill that need and with much difficulty. At the end of the day, we need a way for the state to fund capital requests for emergency shelters because people's lives depend on them, especially during our harsh Minnesota winters. Similar to the Homes for All bill, we are relying on leadership to help make the best decision on how and where funding should come from and hope to see this as a viable option. Please support Capitol Bill HF 3358. McGuetch.
Thank you. Representative Hassan, what happens if you don't get the cash?
If we don't get the cash, that means some of the shelters won't have enough resources.
What would happen if you had more bonding and less cash?
Can I phone a friend?
So
that I'm not giving false information.
Madam Chair.
Please.
My name is Rhonda Addison with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. I'm the executive director. The reason we are asking for cash or housing infrastructure bonds, because we want to maintain flexibility. It's also the quickest way to deploy those resources is through cash. So we know that the unsheltered population, those needs are not being met right now, and we're in a crisis. And so cash would be preferable.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Hassan.
Thank
we recognize
you, everyone.
The urgency. Representative Hamilton. House File 3466. Now, we visited this on our tour, so you better have details about how this is, your request has changed since the tour.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I also want to thank you, like the chair said, for coming out and touring the facility. I would like to, Madam Chair, point your attention to two handouts within that you do have. One talks about the collaboration, the funding, the site, and the design. And the other one is about the vision, mission, and core values. Madam Chair, what I'd like to do, with your permission, is turn it over to a testifier, Stephanie Norenberg, who has not only been a student of, but has also assisted with teaching. I wanted you to hear firsthand from an individual who has been directly impacted from the good work. You've seen the facilities, the existing facilities, and the proposed location. So I wanted you to hear directly from both a student and someone that assists with teaching.
Thank you, Ms. Norenberg. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify here today on behalf of the Well Project for Worthington, Minnesota. My name is Stephanie Norenberg. I am Hispanic American of Nicaraguan descent. When I was 5 years old, I moved to Worthington, Minnesota. I also attended school readiness. In 2010, I graduated from Worthington High School. After high school, I earned my associate's degree in liberal arts at Minnesota West Community and Technical College. Now I work as the bilingual intake orientation secretary for adult basic education. As a child, I had the opportunity to take archery classes through community education. These classes led to my participation in archery competitions. In 2004 and 2005, I won 12 and under division of the Minnesota State Archery Association competition and beat the state record each year. Community education introduced me to skills that I have been able to use and enjoy throughout my life. While I was in middle school and high school, I participated in after-school programs through Nobles County Integration Collaborative, which is a part of community education. I took part in a group called Dynamic 507 that focused on college and career readiness, academic success, cultural awareness, leadership development, and civic engagement. Dynamic 507 provided positive role models who challenged me to do well academically and go on to college. Through Dynamic 507, I gained self-confidence and extensive leadership experience by volunteering with civic and nonprofit organizations. Currently, I work in adult basic education. I have the opportunity to assist diverse residents with enrolling in English language learning, GED, citizenship, and employment readiness classes. The students have told me that participation in our classes have helped them learn skills, gain confidence, and feel better prepared for daily life in the United States. I have been fortunate to participate in programs offered by a variety of organizations in our community. However, the facilities for these organizations are old and overcrowded. Space constraints, accessibility issues, and safety concerns are interfering with their ability to offer much needed services. Worthington has developed an innovative plan for agencies to collaborate so that we can maximize resources. The programs housed in the well will teach workforce skills, increase literacy, close achievement gaps, and inspire youth to pursue higher educations like me. I am excited about the Well Project because it opens up possibilities for the future. The partners firmly believe we can accomplish more together than separately. Our community is very committed to making this a destination that will welcome and nourish the body, mind, and spirit of area residents. I urge you to support the request for $16 million of state bonding funds towards the Well Project. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for your time and consideration for this project. I look forward to the day that my daughter will be able to go to the well and experience the welcoming and inclusive programs.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hamilton, since the last time that we visited the project, I have heard myself and the House Majority Leader have heard from some community members about a potential community center. And so I wanted to ask you, do you know or are there some of your local elected officials here who can talk about the process of engaging with these local community members around finding a community center? And is that considered into this process? And last I heard on this past Saturday, they still want us to talk about possible discussion of what can a community center look like. And so can you speak to that?
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair and Representative Lee, thank you for the question. And you asked specifically if we have someone here. I have both a county administrator and a county commissioner in the audience if you'd like to hear directly from them.
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Commissioner? And?
No, I'll move. You stay right there, okay?
Madam Chair and committee, my name is Matt Woodboom, Nobles County Commissioner, lifelong resident of Worthington. And the community center portion of the Well Project is at the epicenter of what our whole mission is. It's the welcome and the gathering location. And we have had two community-wide meetings and continue to work with the community ed in hearing all voices and what is still in the process of how we can meet those needs in the community center, because as you indicated, it's different for everyone. And I think we're finding the right combination that fits all of the different dialects and diversities across our whole population of our county.
So it's not just a library?
No, ma'am.
What this is it?
This is much more than a library, Madam Chairman and Committee. This is a location that will be able to meet the needs of all of our residents. In the city of Worthington, there's over 50 minority-owned businesses, and we have over 60 dialects spoke at our school district. And with that diversity comes many challenges. And a facility like this would be able to stop the ongoing duplication of the needs of for interpreters for bus transportation. If we're able to have one center that covers a location for our youth to be educated at the same time our new citizens are taking English classes down the hallway, at the same time they're able to do recreation indoors at a facility that will double as a soccer field and also be able to host an indoor playground location for the young kids to be under an education leadership when their mom is going through a class. And we're able to do all this in a safe environment that is going to be a central campus location to cover all of these needs. Right now they're spread at places throughout the city that are not in an easy location to get to with our population.
Commissioner, I didn't get your name, last name.
Madam Chairman, Widboom.
Widboom?
Widboom. Vidvoom, they said in Sweden.
Would you spell it for me?
Madam Chairman, it's W-I-D-B-O-O-M.
Oh. Okay, Widboom. All right. Representative Lee, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Commissioner, can you tell us generally where those specific community members are on board with this process? Are they working with you? Are they supportive of this? Or are you still having ongoing discussion with regards to the specific community center piece that they would like to see?
Madam Chairman, Representative Lee, they are on board. And, you know, it's a continuous effort to be sure that we reach every aspect of our community, from the young to the advanced in age. And we are I'm very confident to say that we're hearing their voices, and they're invited to be a part of the drawing process. And I'm very confident that we are doing a great job of reaching all reaches of our county.
Commissioner Widboom. So this came to us under ISD, Independent School District request, and now the county is being involved. Is the school district still the fiscal agent, or is the county going to take over the fiscal?
Madam Chairman and representatives, it's a collaborative effort between the city of Worthington, the school district, and the county. And all three entities have pledged funding to this project. And the city is involved with the property that they own. They have cleaned up and abandoned an unused space that was a longtime chicken processing facility that is a beautiful spot but is vacant. And a private investor would not take on the task of putting it into a facility like we have planned. But with the three entities involved, we'll be able to pool our resources and do it. The school district has pledged their dollars, as has the county, and the county will serve as the fiscal agent to run the process.
And so what is the total cost of the project?
As it stands today, it's projected at around $38 million. We have a combination of $22 million from the city, or from the school district and from the county, and the land with a several million dollar value from the city of Worthington, and then the $16 million request from the bonding aspect.
Is Worthington a full-service community school?
Madam Chairman, yes. It is a growing school, one of the few schools in rural Minnesota that continues to grow. In fact, over 12 years, they gained nearly 1,300 students. And that has meant many needs for space, including community education. And rather than building another building to house that, it's a perfect fit that it's all combined with the use of a library, integration collaborative. The Chamber of Commerce serves as our welcome center. The school district was successful in a bonding request to the voters of the county this past fall. When you were in Worthington visiting, they were preparing for that November election, and the voters did step up and they approved all the requests that were in front of them. And it was a great victory for the city and for the county to be able to have a new facility for a K through 3 youth that are currently meeting in class in closets and in custodial rooms because of the elementary school is over capacity.
Will you have the proper the results of the referendum that you say was successful in the fall? Would you have that sent to us, the results of that and how it was stated to the people?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Representative Saul, quickly.
Yep. I'm asking mostly just for something that would appear like a Venn diagram or something like that that would give us knowledge of programs, where they exist today and or how they're being facilitated, who's the chief driver in that program, and then how that's going to merge into your end result. That gives us, just like a visit, that gives us something in our head that we can say, okay, this is what we are approving and or pushing forward.
For sure. I'll do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Davids. Representative Davids, welcome to the Capital Investment Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The bill that you have before us, 3608, is basically adding $4 million to the Veterans Home in Fillmore County in the city of Preston. I have it now. The question is, why would you be doing this? And what we're looking at here, Madam Chair, is this does not affect, first of all, Montevideo, Bemidji, or Preston's application with the federal government. Now, just kind of an update. Again, I really want to thank this committee for their help several years ago to fund three veterans' homes in greater Minnesota. As you know, it's Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston. What happened in Preston was there was, through the cost estimates and so forth, we had to cut back on some of the amenities, and I don't really like calling them amenities because I think they're very necessary items to the home. And again, I want to preface my remarks with this is we're not changing anything that would change anything in the federal queue. Everything's out there. MMB, everything has been approved for the three homes in Minnesota. But what we're looking at is we would like to add back some of the amenities that were cut off. And the appropriate place, I think, is to come through the bonding committee to do that. I have with me today Mr. Don Gildner, a veteran from the Preston area, Ron Scavel from Preston, and we have with us today our city administrator for the city of Preston, Joe Huffman. Madam Chair, I would like to turn it over to the city administrator, Joe Huffman.
Mr. Huffman, welcome.
Thank you. Chair Murphy, members of the committee, it's an honor to appear before you today. My name is Joe Huffman. I'm the city administrator for the city of Preston, and as Representative Davids indicated, we have the chairs of our Preston Veterans Home Committee with us here today. I'm here to speak to the request, House File 3608, for supplemental funding for the Minnesota Veterans Home Preston. I will provide a little background on the project. Approximately 33% of veterans in Minnesota live in southeastern Minnesota. That's about 46,000 veterans. And despite that concentration of veterans, there's not a skilled nursing veterans home in the southeast corner of the state. Currently, the nearest facility is the Minneapolis Veterans Home, certainly a great facility, but many veterans in southeastern Minnesota desire and deserve an option closer to home. In 2014, the effort to bring a veterans home to southeastern Minnesota shifted into high gear. After discussions with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, it became clear that the push for a new veterans home would need to be made at the local level and initiated there. And the city of Preston was eager to step up and make the project a community priority. And the city then began to research and develop the home project. The city retained health planning and management resources to do a need study for the home. And the study indicated an immediate need for 224 beds with a demand for 111 beds in 2040 in southeastern Minnesota. In early 2016, the city worked with Horty Elving Architects to develop a project budget, and at that time, the budget was $30 million for a 100-bed facility. The city then led a local fundraising campaign and generated $1.2 million in contributions from individuals, organizations, and units of government. The city acquired a 15-acre project site and made arrangements to donate the site to the state, and the city at that time scaled the project back from 100 beds to 72 beds. After many trips up here to the state capitol in the ensuing years by these gentlemen right here, in 2018, the legislature very generously allocated $10.2 million to the project. That, along with the local allocations, totaled $11.3 million and are matched by $21 million in federal funding, bringing the current budget for the project to $32.3 million. It was at that time that the project was turned over to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Administration. As these two state agencies worked through the pre-design, concerns were raised that the project budget would not support the 72 beds, and ultimately the project was scaled to 54 beds. As the project was further refined, we get to where we are today, and that was that we were told that an additional $4 million in reductions were necessary to keep the facility on budget. And so working with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Administration, the effort was to minimize the impact on the services to the resident veterans in the facility. And the MDVA recommended a variety of reductions and eliminations to some interior and exterior project features. And those proposed reductions are on the tan sheets in the information packets that you have today. They included items such as putting or installing an asphalt shingle roof in lieu of the longer lasting and more costly steel roof, the elimination of drive under canopies at the entrance, as well as a transfer garage, both of which allow residents to enter and exit protected from the elements. Also eliminated is the front entry drive to the site. As it stands now, traffic to the home will enter more from the back through a residential neighborhood. And additional eliminations included outdoor living spaces, parking, a maintenance facility for the home. Our request today is for an additional $4 million to restore those amenities. And as the representative mentioned, I certainly understand that entrance canopies and porches and fire pits and picnic shelters may not seem like essential features for a nursing home, but they are essential to accomplishing our goal of making the facility feel less like an institution and more like a home. As the representative mentioned, there were two other additional homes being proposed in outstate Minnesota, in Bemidji and Montevideo, and we believe that our request today just reinstalls those amenities that those homes in Montevideo, Bemidji, and the other homes around Minnesota do have. And I think our ultimate goal is to ensure that the residents of the Preston facility have the same living experience as residents of other veterans' homes around the state of Minnesota. So in closing, I would like to take this opportunity to once again thank the legislature for the allocation in 2018 and, of course, for your continued support to make this veterans home a reality.
When do you think it's going to open?
Well, we're very optimistic that federal funding will come in the near future. And I think at that point, there's approximately maybe a year and a half for construction, maybe another 6 months for staffing up. And then shortly after that, they would begin accepting residents.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davis.
If I might, thank you, Madam Chair. The state portion of this is done. Everything's been done and submitted. So we're not asking the state to do anything more as far as having it in the queue and hopefully getting funded very soon. We don't know that. We don't know when. The state has done everything they need to do, but in the bidding process and the architects and so forth, they needed to cut some things. And the one that really gets me is the canopies. You know, it's pouring down rain. You're bringing a veteran into the home, and they're standing out there in the rain. just a simple canopy. So there's some things like that that I think are very important. And I should also mention to the committee, as far as the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, you know, of course, I went to seek their support, and they are enthusiastically, agnostically neutral on it. And so what that means is they have been so supportive of this project to get it to this point in all three projects. So I take my hat off to, and I thank the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. But they basically what they did is they said, you know, we're not for it or against it. And then they gave us the numbers as to what we would need, the estimates, to make this work. So just for the record, they have not gone on the record on this project, but they provide us everything we needed to get here.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Davids, I'm looking in the packet, and there's a line, the facility will employ 80 FTE state employees, and I think I had read something in your local paper about housing deficit. Where are you going to put the employees? Is there a housing proposal?
Madam Chair, if I could.
David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's going to happen is people are saying, how are you going to get employees to come here? We have hundreds and hundreds of people, qualified people to work in this facility that work at the mothership in Rochester, driving 45 miles away, and we thank heavens for the mothership that they're a wonderful employer. They're just really, really good. But when we are looking at this, we believe that many people that already have homes that are already driving every day to Rochester, and we love Rochester, will want to get in and be employees at the Preston Veterans Home. So maybe Mr. Hoffman could, I don't know if there's been studies or.
Chair Murphy, Representative Hansen, I would like to think that the Preston community has taken a very holistic approach to the Veterans Home project. Just today, actually, what we're missing right now is a job fair in Preston that we're putting on to bring people to the community and let them know the jobs. I think we have 30 businesses there right now at the high school in Preston promoting jobs in Preston. And our local economic development authority has just launched an initiative to build 120 new homes in Preston over the next 5 years. It's aggressive, but we're excited about it, and there's no doubt that the employment from the Veterans Home has a lot to do with our efforts, both in attracting residents and job seekers as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We will hold this over for consideration.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At
a later date.
Thank you.
Representative Brand. $34.97.
Good morning.
Good morning, Representative Brand. Mr. Marquardt. Please begin.
Yep.
Time is fleeting.
Is somebody from the committee going to move the bill?
No.
No? Okay. All right. Well, sounds good to me. Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to bring attention to my bill, House File 3497, this morning. This bill establishes a new grant program with the Department of Employment and Economic Development to finance child care facilities in Greater Minnesota. It would appropriate $10 million for bonding proceeds and $10 million from general fund for the commissioner to administer the grant program. In Minnesota, we know that there are 40,000 slots that are empty. There are 40,000 kids that don't have child care right now. That means there are parents that can't work. That means there's economy that is still stifled in Minnesota. And so when you talk to people, like I sit on the tax committee, you talk to the city of Warren, Minnesota, who's looking at a local option sales tax for a child care facility. Or if you talk to some of the other representatives, many of whom are signed on to my bill, about child care needs across Greater Minnesota, it's easy to understand the need for a funding program like this. So this program itself would provide grants of up to $500,000 for cities, counties, and schools, or joint powers boards that encompass those three entities for up to 50% of the cost to build, upgrade, or expand child care facilities across the state. This $20 million investment actually represents a $40 million investment because this is just half of the money that would be provided for child care. The rest would be provided by those schools, those counties, and those cities. And so the $20 million from the general revenue and also from the bonding bill would leverage a $40 million investment across our state. Now I'd like to turn it over to Scott Marquardt, and he can talk a little bit more about the bill.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, my name is Scott Marquardt. I'm a resident of Montevideo, and I'm vice president of Southwest Initiative Foundation. We serve a region of 18 counties and two Native nations, with the corners being Ortonville, Jackson, Laverne, and Litchfield, and we're heavily involved daily in the child care crisis in greater Minnesota. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here today in support of House File 3497 to establish and fund this Child Care Facility Capital Grant Program. A huge thank you to Representative Brand and all of the co-authors for introducing this bill to help greater Minnesota communities address this crisis. You've undoubtedly heard many statistics from your constituents regarding the child care crisis in Minnesota. In our region alone, it's at least 4,000 slots. Child care is the fastest growing economic development issue throughout our region, period. We consistently hear from employers throughout our region, large and small, in all sectors, that the shortage of affordable, quality child care is significantly impacting their ability to attract and retain the workforce they need to compete in a global economy. To us, child care is both a business retention and expansion issue and an issue impacting entrepreneurship and business startups. Throughout our region, the data is alarming, and there are countless stories of shortfalls throughout all of our communities. This bill provides the critical funding needed to develop innovative and community-based solutions to tackle this crisis. The purpose statement in the bill summarizes the importance so powerfully: to keep or enhance jobs, increase the tax base, and expand or create new economic development by providing child care for workers and their families. This will address the significant upfront investment required to create or expand a child care facility. The costs for land acquisition, pre-design, design, renovation, and construction can all be significant barriers for child care projects. We routinely see six-digit or seven-digit construction budgets. They're very common throughout greater Minnesota. By providing this upfront investment to offset costs, this program will help child care enterprises contain costs for families and help the enterprises secure the talent they need to compete in a tight labor market for child care professionals. So it's a win-win for both the facilities, the communities, and their families. I can't say enough that there's no one-size-fits-all solution in greater Minnesota. I know that's a buzzword, but it's not. If you see one community, you see one community address this issue. Each town must address it with its own resources, its own challenges, its own opportunities, its own assets. This bill, as written, will foster community-driven solutions with all of its eligible list of recipients. As Representative Brand said, cities, counties, school districts are all eligible, and private child care centers, family licensed providers, and nonprofit providers can all engage under some element. That's huge for us, that all parts of the child care ecosystem can engage. We believe that localized solutions have the best advantages for sustainability and success, and we know that this is going to foster innovation at the local level. Representative Brand talked about leveraging private investment, local philanthropy, in addition to what's statutorily mandated. It's so heartwarming for me and my day job to see how local people are coming together to address this issue. I know time is tight, but travel with me for a moment 2 hours west to Spicer, population 1,200, just north of Wilmer on beautiful Green Lake. In Candiohi County, which is my most populous county, they were short well over 700 slots. Spicer was able to leverage $50,000 out of the deed program, again, obviously not this one, but out of the deed program for capital. They raised over $825,000. So when we talk about leverage, it happens on a daily basis out here, and we're confident that more Spicers and more projects like that will be created with this program. Their $50,000 resulted in 82 new slots in a town of 1,200 and brought, 10X to the table, more than that. Another thing I really want to emphasize is the criteria that are in this is so prudent and important to help ensure that the capital is put into projects that will address the most urgent needs and those with the best chances for success. the requirement of a feasibility study to show sustainability, evidence of need, and analysis of costs and economic benefits are all in here. So that's huge. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Erdahl, quickly.
Yes, quick, best I can answer this question here. Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, this is another important issue, for, as you've said, for Greater Minnesota. As a broken record, I've said many times here that there are two critical needs, housing and child care in Greater Minnesota, because for our workforce, you can't get people to come and live in Greater Minnesota if they have no place to live and no one to take care of their children. Right. The question is regarding private involvement in this, private daycares. You, Mr. Marquardt, you cited that there would be an, a way for them to do that. How? What role do you see private daycares playing in this?
Representative Erdahl, Madam Chair, again, obviously, this is there'll be some pilots that are coming out of this. But even though the the primary target may be cities, counties, school districts, et cetera, we see that there could be lease or management agreements with private daycares put into place. We also understand that whether it be under the bond part or the regular grant part, that they could apply for improvement dollars coming in. We're seeing a lot of collaborations, frankly, between private providers, a church, a school district, a nursing home, something like that. So we think they could come in and probably collaborate with the unit of government. And just really hoping this will develop models that we've never even dreamed of happening before. But it is our understanding under the author's intent that they would be eligible either through a collaborative or through a direct award themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Marquardt. Thank you, Representative Brand. Yep. Representative Brand, as I've hinted to other people today that have come and asked for cash, I have had no indications whatsoever that this committee will have cash to consider. Okay. So, plan. Representative Torkelson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
We are here to present House File 3112, courtesy of the Wabasso Independent School District, home of the rabbits. Madam Chair, I tried to think of some clever way to bring eagles and rabbits into the same conversation, but it generally turned out bad for the rabbits, so I'm not going to do that. But I do have the superintendent of schools from Wabasso here to present to this issue, and I would like to turn it over to him.
Superintendent, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Wade McKittrick. I'm superintendent at Wabasso Public Schools. I do want to thank you and the committee members for allowing me time to address House File 3112, as well as Representative Torkelson for authoring this bill. On behalf of community members of ISD 640, I'm asking for your support in appropriating $400,000 for partial costs of constructing an early childhood learning center at Wabasso Public Schools. As you just heard, there's a daycare shortage in outstate Minnesota, as well as across the state in general. There's also the significant push in early childhood education as one of those field levelers for children across the state as well. This project is unique in that it addresses three areas of need in our community: space to house and grow our district's early learning childhood programs, during school hours, after school programming, as well as summer learning opportunities. Secondly, to aid our district families with four-year-old childcare options due to a significant shortage of providers. And three, providing for a research center and showcase facility for the community's largest business, Johnny Craft Incorporated, a manufacturer of early childhood furniture. Through working together, the district, area child care providers, and Johnny Craft have developed the concept outlined in the brief that you have received. In short, our district is a growing district. We've experienced approximately 13% enrollment growth over the past 6 years that has resulted in our small district maxing out our space availability for our K through 12 programs. That has resulted, or put us in the dilemma, of having to put into consideration deleting some of our early childhood program opportunities and childcare opportunities for lack of space. Johnny Craft has stepped forward, and they've agreed to the current and future furniture needs for the facility. Childcare providers have pledged their support through family planning with current families that they're serving, and referrals to the district program, and the district has allocated $400,000 from our general fund reserves to ensure that a tax burden is not placed through a bond upon our district residents. Our district is one of the few school districts in Southwest Minnesota that does not qualify for VPK funding and the construction fund opportunities that come with that program. In fact, when I've questioned at MDE, I've been encouraged to not even bother to apply because of the rate of our free and reduced lunch population. We have about a 27% free and reduced lunch rate, which doesn't get close to where that line is for schools that are qualifying. Therefore, we've had to work together as a community to develop a plan that's affordable, that's doable, and in the public interest of Redwood County. This, I believe, is one of those unique initiatives that was just being talked about as a way for a community to come together and address multiple issues: economic development, childcare options, and early childhood learning. So the Wabasso Early Childhood Learning Center project is a unique opportunity. We're looking to expand early education opportunities for children. We're looking to address the district childcare shortage, and we're looking to engage in a business partnership that helps grow the economy within our district. I would ask for your support of House File 3112, and I'd make myself available for any questions that you might have at this time.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Torgelson, would this bill, is not as well as the one that in Representative Fabian's district and numerous others, be funded under Representative Brand's bill that we just heard?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Considine. I'm not intimately familiar with Representative Brand's proposal, which we just heard, but it does sound like it probably would fit under such a program should it exist. This need is all across the state. I think we're all aware of how critical this need for facilities and services for our youngest resident citizens is. How we address it in this bonding bill will be up to this committee and the chair as she assembles her bill. I should have pointed out that the handout for this was not in your green sleeve. It was handed out just before committee started. And I would also point out that we're not asking for any cash, Madam Chair.
Appreciate that. Rep. Senator Erdahl, quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, Mr. McKittrick, I would let you know that when I applied to become a teacher, I applied in two school districts, New London Spicer and Wabasso. You were the one that didn't hire me.
Oh, no. I'm confident I wasn't there at the time.
And I thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't hold grudges. I don't hold grudges. But is the big rabbit still on the floor?
It is. Right. It is. Just as you come into town.
Very good. We'll give this to our consideration sometime.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative McDonald. We're a little behind time. Representative McDonald. House File 3644.
Madam Chair, thank you. I am pitch hitting for Representative O'Neill. So this bill is it's the first request that Wright County has requested for a bonding project in my history that I have, I'm aware. At least that's what I've been told. So hopefully that will help our case.
Hence, if it comes with votes. You
this comes with great need and a wonderful project which helps Wright County and those who are in the dental association. So let me just explain real briefly, then I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers. So House File 3644 is a proposal for $2 million in capital investment funds to assist Wright County in constructing a dental care facility, a very important dental care facility, which will be co-located with the new Wright County Government Center, which is being constructed in the great city of Buffalo, Minnesota. Our county, as I stated earlier, has never sought a bonding dollars before, but this project is so vitally important, we thought that it was very necessary that we needed your help in offering public health for those who need it in our county and the surrounding counties, including some members here. So with your support, we hope to gain this great project in Wright County. And with that, Madam Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifier.
Ms. Grosjes.
Good morning, Chair Murphy and members. My name is Sarah Grosjes, and I serve as the Public Health Director of Wright County and its more than 135,000 residents. As Representative McDonald mentioned, we are requesting bonding funds for a very exciting facility that will address a pressing public health need in our area, and that's access to affordable dental care for low-income individuals, either on public health programs such as Minnesota Public Insurance, or they're underserved because they don't have dental insurance at all. Through a three-year public process coordinated by our public health task force, we identified dental health access as one of our top health priorities for our county and also the surrounding area. We have approximately 15,000 residents that receive medical insurance through Minnesota health programs like medical assistance, an additional 55,000 residents in our surrounding counties. That doesn't include folks on Medicare, for instance, who also do not have access to dental insurance unless it's in their supplemental. A 2018 survey of our county found that 24% of adults reported delaying dental care. Of those, 60% reported that cost was the reason for their delay. And that highest delay was actually in the Highway 12 corridor, which is District 5 of our county, and that was 28%, so almost more than a quarter of our residents. However, due to low reimbursement rates through our Minnesota care programs, the dentists practicing in our area are at full capacity, and they cannot accept new patients. Because of this overwhelming need, we have residents often traveling very far for services. Many of them with that delayed care also, we see an issue with our small dental problems turning into very big dental problems. And in fact, between 2015 and 2018, 1,800 patients visited emergency rooms in just Buffalo and Monticello alone. One hospital estimated that each average visit cost $1,200, and the majority of that care went unpaid. For those who seek care, the nearest option is the metro as far as Brooklyn Park, and depending on where someone lives in Wright County, that's a two-hour round trip. And just last week, we learned that the need has become even more urgent. Operation Grace, a safety net provider that periodically serves patients in our area, ceased operations in January. If you live in one of our neighboring counties, I expect the drive is even longer. And that's why we have the support of the Meeker-McLeod-Sibley Community Health Services Board as well. To tackle this problem, we have explored numerous options, including building a standalone clinic, but all provided proved unfeasible or not cost-effective, and with a time frame that we estimated to extend beyond 5 years of planning and fundraising. Just this summer, the opportunity presented itself to co-locate this facility within the new Wright County Government Center, and I want to thank my county commissioners for their vision on this idea. This bonding request would allow us to build out a 6,200-square-foot dental clinic on the site. Co-locating within the Government Center will allow us to achieve significant efficiencies in construction and operation of the facility. To operate the facility, the county has already developed a partnership with Community Dental Care, a nonprofit that already operates similar clinics in Rochester, Maplewood, St. Paul, and Robbinsdale. Community Dental Care's Chief Executive Officer, Karen Kleinhans, is in the audience to support the project and available to answer questions. The Wright County Clinic will have 12 dental chairs, have a staff of 20 to 25, and serve up to 7,000 unique patients a year. In its location in Buffalo off of Highway 25, it is conveniently located to several surrounding communities. Community Dental Care's four existing clinics already serve nearly 50,000 unique patients from 63 of the 87 Minnesota counties and employ around 260 individuals. 90% of the patients they serve are on medical assistance or have no insurance, and we expect the Wright County Clinic to have a similar demographic. While it will be a component of a much larger county-funded construction project, the build-out of this facility would not be possible without state assistance. The total cost of the dental facility is estimated at just over $3.6 million. Co-locating also means this project is as shovel-ready as possible. Included in your packet is a construction timeline that lays out the timeline we would be able to accomplish the project if funding is approved this year. Planning will conclude this fall, with construction able to begin in January of 2021, and this would allow us to begin serving patients in August of 2021. This effort has received broad community support. In addition, from our community public health task force, we've had several area dentists participate in the dental work group, and they have, they're very in support of this project because they are continually turning people away. Also included your packets are letters of support, as I mentioned, from Meeker McLeod Sibley, Community Dental Care themselves, Alina Health of Buffalo, and Center Care in Monticello. And I expect we're going to see similar support from our surrounding counties. They're still working through their project. As I mentioned, our timeline is rather abbreviated. And I also want to thank our co-authors, Representative McDonald and Representative Erdahl. Because this opportunity arose when it did, we didn't have the opportunity to host you for a tour. But we would be happy if it should be available in your schedule to come during the session. And in addition, Community Dental Care would be happy to host you at one of their existing clinics. The site is actually currently under construction. So with that, I sincerely thank you for hearing HF3644, and I ask for your support to help us serve individuals across central Minnesota. And I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Groshes. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a very quick question. Would Wright County be the fiscal agent on this request?
Chair and Representative, that's correct. Wright County is serving as the fiscal agent.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quick. First of all, thank you for doing this bill. It's a very important issue in Greater Minnesota. As you've indicated, there are many people who are unserved or underserved. And just giving one example, my wife worked for group homes. Mm-hmm. And group home residents are almost universally turned down and unable mm-hmm. to get care. And now they would be able to by going to your facility from Meeker County, which, as you indicated, is one of the counties that is supporting this.
That is correct.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very quick. I just want to congratulate Wright County, Meeker County, on stepping up to provide dental care for their citizens. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I had a great poll.
Time is fleeting, Representative Dean.
Great. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Apologize for being a little bit late. I've been a little bit under the weather, but I'm here because this is such an important project. House File 3366 will provide funding for firefighters, for healing, for a facility that will house 12 units that will be for burn survivors and their families. And I could go on and tell you all the important things about this project, but I have a testifier, the founder of Firefighters for Healing, Jake LaFerriere, and I'm going to turn it over to him.
Thank you very much. Good morning, representatives and Chair Madam. I'm going to thank you for your time to give me a moment just to share a little bit about our organization and our initiative. There should be a
Please
folder.
Introduce yourself first.
Yeah, my name is Jake LaFerriere. So there will be some folders coming on with a little bit more details, but my name is Jake LaFerriere. I'm a second-generation Minneapolis firefighter. Back in 2010, I almost made the ultimate sacrifice on the fire ground. As my childhood dream has always been to be a second-generation firefighter in Minneapolis, just like my dad. I took that oath very seriously, as I felt that was my civic obligation to protect and serve the community. However, little did I know, God had a bigger plan in store for me. Back on July 3rd, 2010, we got a call, Smoke in the Billion, fire over southeast Minneapolis. I was on a specialized company called Rescue 9, and we responded over to the Smoke in the Billion call. Upon arrival on the scene, we had a big three-story house with reports of students in there. Me and my company, we're going to go in as we always do and make a primary search, is what we call it, for the students to make sure that everybody was out of the building. And when at the same time, we're going to look for the location of the fire so we can actually put the wet stuff on the red stuff. As we went up to the third floor to search for the students, we got up to the third floor and we had real no visible fire at this point. Really bad smoke condition. As nobody really knows, is when you're in a smoky environment, your hands become your eyes. So you start to feel things and work your way through this room. And we got to the center of this room, me and my captain, where we heard a fire that was crackling in the knee wall. At this point, it was pretty much a standard fire, if there is ever such a thing as a standard fire. We radioed for our engine company with the water, the hose line, to bring the hose line up to the third floor. We were just going to expose the fire that was in the knee wall and put the water on the fire and go back to the station. What we didn't know in that moment as we radioed and the engine started coming up is when I went to breach in the wall, we had a backdraft house explosion that took place, like in the movies back with the Kurt Russell. Basically, it was a fire starving for oxygen. When it got that introduction, the house picked up off the foundation and blew up, and it was a inferno. It blew me 11 feet one way, my captain the 11 feet the other way. I came to in the midst of trying to save my life, and seen a beam of sunlight come through the window, and I jumped on fire from the third floor and ended up surviving. They whisked me down to Hennepin Healthcare Hospital, where they brought me in with third and fourth degree burns, broken bones, and in the initiative to try to save my life, I ended up staying inpatient for just a shy 6 weeks. Not many people know what a burn unit is, but it's a living hell, essentially. So I didn't know how I was going to get through that experience. I didn't know how I was going to get through my days until I met two little boys, a 3- and a 5-year-old. Those two little boys had badly burned because they were living in a tent because their family lost everything. In the moment, I knew that these boys became my guardian angels in this experience, and I knew that if they could go through this experience, that I could. So in that moment, my purpose from life went from being a firefighter like my dad to being to helping kids and advocating for them. So essentially, in that moment is when Firefighters for Healing was born, back in 2010. I'm a fireman, and as you can tell, this is a very difficult thing, so I prepared a short statement at this point to just read more in detail. For the past 10 years, we've been very busy as an organization, delivering hope down to the burn unit bedside for children and patients. We've created our very own burn camp called Camp Red, which is up in Cross Lake, that provides a judgment-free zone for children to embrace their scars just the way they are and providing a healing platform for them to create lifelong friends so that they can both heal physically and emotionally. After launching our camp, we set our vision on our next goal. That goal is to provide short-term and long-term housing for children, families, and firefighters, and first responders. Over the past 2 years, we've worked really hard to support these heroes by leasing 3 apartments just one block away from Hennepin Healthcare. However, we quickly learned that the need is much greater than just the 3 apartments. We're here today to ask for your financial support for our new Transitional Healing Center that will support the entire state of Minnesota, especially those traveling to the Twin Cities for care and need a place for their families and themselves to stay during their treatment and recovery. Thanks to our partner, George Sherman of Sherman Associates, we've secured a location of 15,000 square feet that will provide a home away accommodations for up to 12 families, just one block away from Hennepin Healthcare. And this project is shovel ready. In fact, your financial support of this bill will connect Hennepin Healthcare to the downtown Skyway system for the first time ever. This will be a tremendously helpful for first responders and burn survivors that will often travel back and forth from our center to the hospital daily. I want to take a moment to thank all you from the most sincere place in my heart for giving us a couple minutes to shine some light on this bill and the beautiful work that needs to continue to leave this legacy footprint of healing long after we're gone. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll stand for any questions folks have.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any funding or ideas that you have for mental health issues that firefighters suffer?
We do actually. We have a partner in the philanthropic space called Minfire. They have a house on the thing, and we are looking to utilize some of our space to help them as well with their PTSD as they serve their mission and stuff. Coming from a distance, there's going to be a lot of that. So we're looking to try to help however we can with other nonprofits and missions that are generally related to not only just the first responders, but everything that we deal with, from cancers to PTSD to everything, heart-related stuff and cancers and stuff as well.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. LaFerrara, I just want to thank you for your work in this area. And, you know, you're not a hero because of what happened to you, but you're an inspiration for how you have used that incident to help others. And I just want to say thank you for doing that.
Thank you very much. It's been a kind of a difficult journey, but I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cagle. House File 83897.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the intersection I've been banging my drum about since I got into the legislature. And there's some pictures being passed around. I just want to show this picture of all of us in the Transportation Committee marching through the snow at the when we did our North Metro transportation tour. And so this is a great, I really loved making everybody get off the bus and walk these paths that people use in my neighborhood to get from the transit station to the various destinations around there. And so I wanted to turn it over to Chief Podaney to talk about the intersections at 85th and University and what a danger it is in our community.
Police Chief Podaney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives Brian Podaney, Safety Services Manager and Chief of Police for the City of Blaine, Minnesota. I have to say, Jake LaFerrier is a tough act to follow. So, but that being said, I'm here to talk briefly about the University 85th Avenue intersection, otherwise known as State Highway 47. This intersection actually falls entirely within the City of Blaine, but is bordered by multiple communities in the North Metro, including Spring Lake Park, Fridley, and Coon Rapids. And I put together just a very short packet in the interest of being respectful of your time and interest, summarizing some of the data surrounding that intersection. If you look at the packet, the first page, beyond the title page, in the northeast corner of that intersection is Northtown Mall. And there's a large transit hub there, and that transit hub is going to be relocating down to San Bernal Drive, along San Bernal Drive in the southern portion of Northtown. And so this is, the timeliness of this bill is appropriate as well. But we've had substantial problems at that intersection in the way of pedestrian safety, also vehicle safety, but focalized on pedestrian safety. And it seems that it's turned into not if, but when we have another pedestrian fatality there. You see some data there. We've had 3 fatalities in the last 4.5 years there, 54 property damage crashes, 15 hit and runs, multiple other pedestrian crashes where people were injured. And there's a number of things with the proximity of the intersection. There's currently no sidewalks there. We have a large amount of high density housing in the southwest corner of the intersection. That coupled with the transit hub and the retail districts, both in the northeast and the south northwest sides of the intersection, all contribute to the substantial pedestrian traffic in the area. We've had, as you can, I've laid out the data there. This is an area, certainly, you'll see me back here at some point for Highway 65 as well. But this is the area right now that is a great need right now that we need to do something about to try to improve the pedestrian safety in this area. This is State Highway here. We've done a lot of initiatives with Northtown Mall to try to improve some of the safety for the people, not only using the transit hub, but we do have a fairly substantial homeless population in the area as well that we've worked proactively with Anoka Heading Home Housing Collaborative. And unfortunately, a number of our victims have been part of that population as well. So we are doing what we can to try to help people in the area from an enforcement standpoint, but unfortunately, we need some engineering assistance and some assistance with the just redoing that area. So I'm asking for your support for House File 3897 for an appropriation to improve for pre-design, design, and construct pathway improvements in the area at that intersection.
And that is a local road?
85th is a local road, correct. And as you go east and west, as it goes east, it goes directly into Northtown, and it the intersection is with the, Highway 47. As it goes east, it goes into Northtown, and that becomes private property there. But being that they are going to be redoing that eastern portion already, with the transit hub moving from the west, kind of just north side of that intersection, to the southeast corner of the intersection, now would be the important time to engineer the improvements for pedestrian safety so we don't have to redo that after we move that. So.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Cagle.
Currently, right now, there's just footpaths for people. And so when we had our transportation tour there, it was a perfect example of how people are using that. There was a woman who was walking from the transit station with her groceries on a cart and had to use her cart to, pull her cart up over the snowbank to get to the intersection. And Representative Heinrich asked me, well, why aren't these plowed? Why aren't we taking care of these? I said, well, there's nothing here to take care of. It's literally footpaths going from the transit station to the very busy intersection that people are traveling through.
And so what part of this is the Transportation Committee covering?
I don't believe that they're covering any of it right now. So we're asking for general obligation bonds so that we can make sure that our pedestrians can travel safely around there.
And you want design and pre-design?
And construction, I believe.
And construction.
We want to get it all done.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very quick question. Where does this fall as far as Anoka County's priorities for the legislative session?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and Representative Juergens. It is something that we're working with Anoka County on. It's also one of the issues that the North Metro Mayors Association is in support of. As far as priorities, I'm not sure, where it ranks on their list, but I've been in close contact with the Anoka County City Anoka County Planner Administrator, Joe McPherson. We've been working hand in hand on this and along with the cities, and so I hope it's a high priority.
Thank you, Madam. Just as a follow-up, I would think because of the safety issues, it would rank fairly highly, I would assume.
And Madam, any last words, Chief Podeni?
No, thank you for hearing us today.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. We got that. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is just a quick comment to one of the points or questions that was made earlier for some of the work that we're doing with local organizations and their partnership with the state seeking capital bonding. It's not fiscal agents, but public owners. And I have an in-depth conversation with Ms. Dyson on this. And so if members have any questions, feel free to reach out to her. So they are public owners and not fiscal agents.
Good point. Representative Dean, I'm asking you to be the recipient of people that have strong opinions about the Ford building to express themselves to you and come up with some plan in light of the communication that we received from the Capital Area Planning Board, and whether it's inclusion or whether it's whatever, but if you could accept strong opinions and vet them out a little bit or develop some kind of a concept.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to be that vessel for individuals who want to pour in their thoughts. Ultimately, I think that this is one of those projects that needs to have lots of discussion and lots of debate, and I think, you know, there's probably as many different opinions as what to do with that particular project as there's people that have ideas about that. So I'm happy. Anybody reach out to me, you know, you guys know my 537 if you've never been up to my office. Happy to have you come by, and happy to be that individual to sort of spearhead some of the conversations.
And we will be talking further because I have opinions too. Okay. But
that did include the chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, it's been pointed out to me by staff that we already have an early childhood facility grant program in place. It's very similar to what Representative Brand is proposing. No, am I mistaken? Similar to mine. whatever's there, we should know more about it, because I don't know enough about it myself, okay. Madam Chair.
Thank you for that hint. We need many hints as we're going along now. And a hint to the public and a hint to members and all your colleagues. You can't keep depending on the fact that we're going to hear your bill, because time is running out, and we have to start condensing rather than expanding. And so it's very likely that we won't have too many meetings like we will have tomorrow night that could go who knows how long if you don't keep your one person that's going to talk on the time schedule. Because we have 40 bills to hear tomorrow night. This meeting is adjourned.